May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord. Amen. Amen. Do you remember the first time someone asked what you wanted to be when you grow up? I was about 4, and I said I wanted to be a horse. I was a little hurt when everybody laughed. What do you want to be when you grow up? It's actually not as simple a question as it seems. For the small child, it is an invitation to dream. Anything is possible. Astronaut, opera singer, builder, writer, horse. For the teen or the young adult, there's pressure. How do I choose what to do? Will I be able to support myself? Am I good enough to follow my dream? And for the person at middle age, it's a different kind of pressure. What have I done with my life up until now? Have I made a difference? Is it too late to dream? So on this Labor Day weekend, we think of work. But in the context of our faith, work isn't just about punching the clock. Work is something that takes up most of the waking energy of our lives. And for our lives to flourish, work needs to be meaningful and balanced. So yes, work is about dreams, our dreams, and God's dreams for us. We ask our questions, what is my calling? What is my vocation? What are my gifts? What sets me on fire? What won't let me go? What is it that I can't not do? In the words of Frederick Buechner, where does my greatest joy meet the world's greatest need? If there isn't one already, and there may well be, there should be a theology of Labor Day. It would be based in the concept of the Imago Dei, the way in which our identity is rooted in the image of God. We've been created in the image and likeness of God, which means two things. As creatures made in God's image, we all carry that spark of the divine within us that irrevocably connects us to God. And to be made in the likeness of God, of the one whose spark we carry, is to be creative beings, to live faithfully, persistently, and courageously into God's call, however that is going to manifest itself through our life and our work. So on Labor Day, we may ponder how our work and how the institutions and the systems in which we work reflect the Imago Dei, that image of God, our calling to live into what we have been created to do and to be. But no surprise here. Our systems and our institutions have a long way to go in embodying any kind of a sound Labor Day theology. This gap between the world as it is and the world that we yearn for is an old story. And the writer of the letter of James knew that well. First, a bit of background on the letter. Scholars have concluded, mostly through linguistic clues, that the epistle was probably not written by James, the brother of Jesus, as was claimed for centuries. But pseudonymous letters like this were common in the early centuries of the church. They were like tributes to those who were greatly respected in the community, like, for example, the Apostle Paul, or in this case, James, who was the brother of Jesus, the leader of the church at Jerusalem, who was revered as a wise and courageous shepherd and a martyr for the faith. So, the writer of the letter of James, hereinafter referred to as James, He had strong opinions about economic justice and the importance of living one's faith with integrity. And his views on faith versus works that have been argued since the Reformation as an either-or binary, faith or works, which is more important? It's actually a both-and argument for what we might call praying with your feet, walking the talk. When he says faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead, walk the talk. Live your faith. So, how should people of God manifest their faith through their actions? Well, the foundation for James, the foundation of a life of faith and life in a faithful community lay in abiding by what was called God's law, what he called God's law of liberty, as given in the commandments, and especially as summarized by Jesus in the words, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." And for James, the transgression of part of the law was tantamount to transgression upon the whole of it. No excuses. For James, to show partiality, to show favoritism, was as consequential a sin as murder and adultery. That's how seriously he took it. In James's theology, God's heart was particularly open to the poor and the disadvantaged, the vulnerable. For James, the beloved community was a reflection of God's care and compassion for the most vulnerable. And when the people of the community turned their back on that reflection by showing preference for the rich and the powerful patrons with their gold rings and their fine clothes, they were denying the very humanity of the people who had been made in the image and likeness of God. They had committed a betrayal as grievous as adultery or murder. The way of the world was to give honor and privilege to wealth, power, and outward appearance. The way of God, the way of Jesus, on the other hand, was to throw the world's rules out the window. So how do we hold this passage in conversation with Labor Day theology? Labor Day itself came about in the 19th century in order to honor American workers as part of a labor movement which sought to redress the abuses of workers, the vulnerable, by industry owners and management, figuratively wearing fine clothes and gold rings. And this was at the height of the Industrial Revolution in the late 19th century. The abuses, such as low wages, unsafe working conditions, exploitation of children, immigrants, and the poor. The way of the world was to privilege those with power and money, while the most vulnerable suffered. For the workers in those days, it was not a time for choices or dreams. Labor Day and the movement that birthed it celebrated the value of the work for the individual, for the family, for the community. It celebrated the prospect of being able to dream beyond subsistence to vocation. But it's not a perfect world. And I suspect James would still have plenty to say today about the vast wealth gap, the shrinking middle class, and the new gilded age. Is it not the rich who oppress you? Is it not they who drag you into court? Is it not they who blaspheme the excellent name that was invoked over you? The privileged of today are not always as obvious as the finely dressed and bejeweled patrons of James's day. They may not even think of themselves as privileged. For example, during the pandemic, many of us have had the flexibility to work from home, while others on the front lines were forced to risk illness or face losing their jobs. We see medical personnel in hospitals facing overwhelming emotional and physical workloads with the sick and the dying, even as people refuse to take common sense measures for the well-being of themselves and community. If a brother or sister is burnt out and exhausted, and one of us says, "Go in peace, you're a hero," but refuses to wear a mask or get a vaccine, what is the good of that? People work multiple jobs to make ends meet. College graduates face outrageous student loan debt. Teachers pay for school supplies out of their own pockets, while the gap between CEO and employee pay gets bigger and bigger and bigger. My brothers and sisters, we demand same-day delivery from Amazon, and we say to Jeff Bezos, "No, sir, Mr. Bezos, sir, you don't have to pay federal taxes on your profits." But to the delivery person, we say, "Keep driving. You don't have time for a break." Have we not made distinctions among ourselves and become judges with evil thoughts? The institutions and systems that are the way of the world do not easily allow for dreams. They are crushing them. But the Wall Street Journal reports, and I saw an article this morning's paper that I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I saw the headline, reporting that workers are actually seeing increases in wages as companies offer incentives to attract workers in this almost post-pandemic labor shortage. People are able to seek jobs that pay better, even to look for work that is more interesting, more fulfilling, less soul-sucking, to be able to consider vocation and not merely subsistence. Some are calling it the Great Resignation or the I Quit phenomenon. In another article, yes, I did a lot of reading this week. In another article, it was called "The Pandemic Revealed How Much We Hate Our Jobs. Now We Have the Chance to Reinvent Work." Joanne Lippman wrote of Carrie and Britt Altizer, who were a Virginia couple who gave up their office jobs to run their own landscaping business. They've rethought their work, their time, childcare, their commute. They've rethought everything, and they're able to dream again. Carrie says, "We're not robots." No, we're not. We are made in God's image and likeness, made to create, made to flourish, made to dream, and to be part of God's dream for creation. And as people of faith, we are called not merely to desire and pray for those systemic changes that make meaningful work a reality for all of God's beloved. We are called to agitate for them, to press for living wages, adequate childcare, adequate health care, affordable housing, reduction of student loan debt. It's all connected, just as we are all connected. No one can truly flourish until all of us have the opportunity to flourish, to match our greatest joy with the world's deepest need. As a society, as a beloved community, we are still very young, in our infancy. We still have a long way to go toward that beloved community, but we are still forming, and we have choices to make as we face our uncertain future. What do we want to be when we grow up? Amen.